Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Hare Krishna. So reading from the King of Books, Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 6, Chapter 9, entitled The Appearance of the Demon Dhritarasura, Text 43. And some prose verse, so I'll just read it. And we won't do the word for word, is that correct? Just read it.
Atta eva svayam tad upakalpaya smakam bhagavata paramagurostava charana shata palashach chayam vividha vrijina samsara parishramo pashamanim upashistanam vayam yat kamino pasaditaha.
Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, Srila A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada Gita. Dear Lord, You are omniscient, and therefore You know very well why we have taken shelter at Your lotus feet, which provide shade that gives relief from all material disturbances. Since You are the Supreme Spiritual Master and You know everything, we have sought shelter of Your lotus feet for instruction. Please give us relief by counteracting our present distress. Your lotus feet are the only shelter for a fully surrendered devotee, and are the only means for subduing all the tribulations of this material world.
Purport. One need only seek shelter of the shade of the Lord's lotus feet. Then all the material tribulations that disturb him will be subdued. Just as when one comes under the shadow of a big tree, the disturbances caused by the heat of the scorching sun are immediately mitigated, without one's asking for relief. Therefore, the whole concern of the conditioned soul should be the lotus feet of the Lord. The conditioned soul suffering from various tribulations because of existing in this material world can be relieved only when he seeks shelter at the Lord's lotus feet.
Hare Krishna.
Om Ajnana Timurandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Malitam Yena Tasmai Shri Guruve Namah. Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Garadhar Shivasari Gaura Bhaktavinda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
So the whole concern of the conditioned soul should be the lotus feet of the Lord. Of course, we have so many other concerns, as is being described in these verses, that these demigods, they're praying to the Lord for relief from their material distress. And interestingly enough, in this verse, it points out that they're fully cognizant of the fact that the Lord is fully cognizant of what it is that they need and want. And yet, they still have to ask for it. They can't really help it in this case. In the next verse, they're going to say, even though you know what it is we're here for, please kill this demon. So they're conscious of what the standard is, in a sense, that the Supreme Personality of Godhead is omniscient. One doesn't need to request something from the Lord. He's already conscious of what it is that we need. It's like a little child, a little baby. It doesn't need to like go up to its parents and say, oh, I need this, I need that. Please fulfill all these necessities. The parent already knows exactly what the child needs. And yet, in the case of these demigods, even though they're aware of the fact that that's the standard, in another sense, they're not aware of it. They can't just be pure devotees, as is described in previous verses. Sakama. They have lots of desires, and that's the reason for approaching the Lord. Of course, pure devotional service, as we know from Rupa Goswami, is anya bilashita shunyam jnana karma janavritam. To have any sort of desire that's separate from the desire of the Lord, shunyam, to completely eliminate that. That's a pretty high standard. And jnana karma janavritam, to be completely uncovered or uninfatuated by, academic veneer and ritualistic finesse. Anavritam. Gena Karmadi Adi. It also says Adi. Adi is like a Sanskrit word which means etc. or anything else following. So just in case you're thinking that there's something beyond Gena and Karma, which might also be devotional service, Rupa Goswami says clearly, Gena Karmadi Avritam. Everything else you can think of. All these things are disqualifications. And yet we find that it's very common for us to do just that, to try to substitute our devotional service with some sort of finesse or prowess and ritualistic activity. It's relevant to us, at least to some of us, that we're in a culture of devotees, we're in a society of persons who have the same ideology and the same philosophy and the same goals, and naturally certain mannerisms and activities and cultural norms come about, and one can give the impression that they're very advanced in devotion simply by success in performing certain activities. They know how to dress in the right way. They know how to speak the right thing at the right time. They know all of the ISKCON vernacular. When to say Jai Prabhu and when to say Ki Jai. Subtle differences. I know how to wear my dhoti in incredible fashions. I have the finest silk. Right? Big sika. We can do all sorts of things so nicely and correctly within the culture of devotees to give the impression that I must be advanced in devotion. But this is karma, really. Ritualistic activity. In so many places in Prabhupada's books, he describes that the neophyte is one who's concerned simply with the rituals of the temple and is unable to appreciate, respect, and serve other devotees and other living entities appropriately. So how much do we find ourselves doing that? We can ask ourselves, if we want to be honest, that I've kind of got it down externally, and therefore I'm giving the impression that I'm doing well in devotion, whereas in the heart, the real issue of taking shelter of the Lord, having faith in Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, might not have taken place at all. Some devotees, they can go on for years and years like this, just going through the motions, but in the heart, there might not be any confidence in service to the Lord. There might not be any satisfaction there. And such a person could inherit a position of leadership and really harm others as well. Unfortunately, the history of our society shows that that's happened a lot. So we don't want to make the mistake of thinking that just by being successful in the external mannerisms of the Vaishnava culture means that I've become advanced in devotion. So therefore, karma anavritam, pure devotion, has nothing to do with this sort of fruitive ritualistic activity. There's a really good story, actually, which illustrates this, how sometimes we're thinking that this is how I'm going to conquer Krishna, just by being, like, quite ritualistic. That when Krishna was dispatched by Maharaj Yudhishthira to Hastinapur to be the ambassador for peace before the Battle of Kurukshetra, actually, Krishna himself volunteered to go. And Dhritarashtra, he had been hearing so much preaching from Vidura and from Sanjay and from great personalities like Vyasadeva and whatnot. They were saying how Krishna is the supreme person. You should do everything that he says. You should just completely take shelter of him and all of your problems will be solved. And Dhritarashtra, he kind of understood it, but in another sense, he kind of didn't, like these demigods. And so when Krishna was entering Hastinapur, Dhritarashtra made so many elaborate arrangements for his reception. He said, I want to make sure that the entire city is decked out for Krishna's arrival. He had Duryodhana construct all of these pavilions with every type of imaginable, enjoyable sense object. And Duryodhana had made sure that there's flags and festoons everywhere, and the streets were washed and all that sort of stuff. And he said, I want every single one of my sons to come out of the city to greet Krishna, except for Duryodhana. They'll all be there to greet him personally. And he was telling this to in the assembly of Vidura and Bhishmadeva and Duryodhana. And Vidura was saying, you know what, Dhritarashtra, great king, even if you offered the entire earth to Krishna, he's not inclined to accept it from you. Because he's coming here with a particular desire and you're not going to execute his will. So what's the point of making all of these offerings? Actually, what you're trying to do is somehow appease to the Lord just by your opulence and by your ritual, and that way separate him from his devotees, the Pandavas. And it's not going to happen. That's what Vidura told Dhritarashtra. And then Duryodhana chimed in. He had his 10 cents to share. He said, yes, yes, I agree. Krishna's not going to be separated from these Pandavas in any situation, so I might as well not worship him opulently when he comes. I agree with you. And Bhishma Dev, he also had a statement. He said, Dhritarashtra, not only should you deck out the entire city and worship Krishna with such opulence that is unimaginable, but you should also do everything that he says when he comes. You should do both. So Dhritarashtra was thinking, if I've got success in my external manifestation of devotion, then therefore it's all in the bag. It's all signed and sealed. But Vidura pointed out to him, no, because you're not actually in tune with the Lord's will. You're not actually interested in satisfying the Lord, then all of these things are useless. You could offer the entire earth, but Krishna says if it's not prayata atmanaha, if it's not in pure consciousness, he doesn't have to accept it. Is that something we need to be conscious of? And then there's jnana. We have this desire to try to lord it over, to be superior to others in terms of philosophical prowess and rhetoric. Thinking that I can slaughter all of my opponents with a slew of shlokas or something like that. Or using Prabhupada said like grenades, right? To destroy all the other devotees. Prabhupada said this, Prabhupada said that. And this way we're trying to conquer others. Thinking again that this is going to substitute the fact that I haven't really taken shelter of the Lord. Thinking that's going to give the impression to others that I know what I'm doing, that I'm a devotee. So this is very dangerous. The fact of the matter is that Krishna is beyond all of our philosophy, all of our speculations. We had hands-on experience of this in the pastime of Lord Krishna bewildering Lord Brahma. This is something that actually every single one of us can relate to. It's a very special pastime because it's not just that it happened so many thousands of years ago and therefore you can't receive the same result as Lord Brahma. Actually, what happened is that Lord Brahma was completely bewildered by Krishna's opulence of sweetness. He himself had prayed to Krishna to come. He and all the demigods, they made all of the arrangements for Krishna to come and advent himself on the earth at the milk ocean. And he himself saw Krishna perform so many incredible activities like killing Akasura, Putana, things like that, Chinavarta. And yet, when he saw Krishna playing with the cowherd boys in the forest of Braj, he's completely bewildered. It wasn't comprehensible to him. It didn't fit in with his philosophy, his conception of what the Supreme Absolute Person should be doing. The Bhagavatam describes Krishnasya Vishvakpuru Raji Mandalayar Abhyana Napula Drisho Vrajar Bhaka Stahopavishte Vipine Vrejus Chadaya Tamboruha Kanikaya. What is this incredible opulence that Krishna was demonstrating that can bewilder even Lord Brahma? Is that he's sitting there in the forest with all these boyfriends, and they've made this like formation, like a lotus flower, where Krishna's in the middle, and he's surrounded by his 8 principal cowherd boyfriends, who are surrounded by the 16 next cowherd boyfriends, who are surrounded by 32 other cowherd boyfriends, surrounded by 64 other cowherd boyfriends, so on and so forth, unlimitedly. And all of these cowherd boys, they're increasingly beautiful because of their attention being focused upon Krishna. Lord Brahma has a concept of the Supreme Lord as being one who receives offerings of sacrifice through the fire by other great demigods and create incredible ritualistic performances. But these cowherd boys are offering their sacrifice after they've eaten it themselves. They open up their lunch boxes and they've got laddus and they've got pakoras and they've got samosas or who knows what else. And when they take a bite of something, they go, Krishna, this is so good. You've got to try it. And they pop it into his mouth. Just like that. They pull out something. Oh, Krishna, this is delicious. You've got to have one of these. And they put it into his mouth. And Krishna's very happy to accept that offering. And so Lord Brahma's like, I've never seen anything like this before. I haven't seen Narayan do this or Vishnu do this. I'm not so sure now. And they're a little bit dirty. They're wrestling in the forest. There's mud and feathers and things. Feathers are muchi. Right? Krishna eats with his left hand. I don't want to open up a whole political debate, but it's something to think about. Krishna eats with his left hand. It's muchi. When these cowherd boys and their cows go down to the bank of the Jamuna to water the cows, to give them water, they get right down on the bank and drink water with the cows. like at the same time, in the same spot.
The cow's right here and they're right there and they're drinking.
That's not so suchi. And so Lord Brahma, he was like, okay, I'm not so sure now. He's a little bit doubtful. And he thought, well, okay, he wasn't having the best of days. I'm just going to do a little bit of a test, you know. And he took the Gowherd voice using his own. He has his own sort of yoga maya, you can say. And he took the Cowherd boys and put them into a cave. And so this will kind of sort everything out. As soon as he turned around, those Cowherd boys were there. And he thought, what happened? And he looked back in his cave and he saw the Cowherd boys were still there. And he thought, and he looked back this way and the Cowherd boys were there as well. He became completely bewildered. He started to doubt whether or not he was seeing those original Cowherd boys, or are those the ones that I put into my cave? Are these imitation Cowherd boys? Am I even seeing clearly? Can I even trust my own senses? Can I trust my own mind? Complete breakdown. Which is really healthy, actually, if you're a devotee. Because he suddenly had the realization that Krishna is beyond speculation. He's beyond comprehension, philosophically. This is the person who is the most intelligent entity in the universe. He began to doubt his own faculty for pratyakshan anuman, perception and reason. He's lost it. And so he's completely bewildered. He was bewildered by Krishna's opulence of sweetness. And what's really interesting, what's relevant for us, is that if we're not bewildered by that pastime, if we're not surprised that Krishna manifested himself as all these other Cowherd boys and cows, then actually we're also being bewildered by being unable to appreciate that Krishna is beyond comprehension and speculation. We're thinking, oh, of course Krishna expanded himself as Cowherd boys and cows because he's God, obviously. But then in that consciousness, we're actually missing out on the point that Krishna's superiority, his supreme position, is his sweetness, that he's Krishna first, he's God second, in a sense. That Krishna himself, the little Cowherd boy, Nandalal, that's the supreme person. It's not like Narayan or Vishnu has taken on some form as Krishna. It's just the opposite. Krishna takes on the form of Narayan and Vishnu. So if we hear this pastime of Lord Brahma being bewildered, and we're not bewildered, thinking that that's entirely natural that Krishna would just expand himself as these Cowherd boys, then actually we are being bewildered, missing out. And this is why our jnana, our propensity to understand things philosophically is not actually the means of understanding Krishna. It's not the means of conquering Krishna. Jnana karma dina vritam. That's something that we learned from this pastime. So, similarly, just like Lord Brahma, he kind of knew Krishna, and yet at the same time he didn't know. And these demigods here, they know Krishna. They know what is the topmost understanding. They know that the Lord already knows what they need, and yet they can't help but ask for it. They can't help but inquire in that way. And so therefore we should appreciate that pure devotional service, to really just recognize Krishna as the Supreme Lord, to be completely surrendered, to have absolute faith and trust in him, is not something very cheap. And it's not something that we can substitute with affluence and ritualistic activities or speculative knowledge. That's not any substitute at all. And when we start to appreciate that pure devotional service is such an incredible thing, unata ujvala rasam shvabhakti shriyam, the most incredible manifestation of the Lord's own devotional service, when we start to appreciate that that's such an incredible thing, then we can really effectively go about the means of really getting it, by hearing and chanting about Krishna's pastimes with his devotees, not by our own finesse in performing certain activities, or by our own philosophical prowess, by our comprehension of Sanskrit shlokas, right? Our ability to lord it over other devotees. It's actually by hearing and chanting about Krishna's pastimes with his devotees, that seed of real devotion, pure devotion, beyond karma and jnana, it just starts to sprout naturally. It's not like you have to fake it. That's the whole point. We don't have to fake it by putting on a show. If we're hearing about Krishna's activities with his devotees, that pure love of Krishna, it comes naturally because it's already there. It just needs to be revitalized. Chaitanya Charitamrita says, Nityasira Krishna Prema Sadhyaka Vinoy Shravanari Shurachite Korya Udoy. Actually, within the heart of every living entity, pure love of Krishna is already there. All of these mellows of devotional service, all these ecstatic relationships between you and the Lord is already there. It's just become covered. Covered by so many nasty things. But Shravana Adi Shudichite Karya Udoy. Just by hearing and chanting about Krishna's pastimes with the devotees, it remanifests. The pure love of Krishna remanifests. So it's not faking it. All we have to do is hear Krishna's pastimes with the devotees, read Srimad Bhagavatam, Krishna book. And those original sentiments of devotion, they'll remanifest. And so we should have a longing for it. We should have a very strong longing to hear about Krishna's pastimes with the devotees in order to cultivate those same moods. And an intelligent devotee recognizes that even though I'm in a position where I'm completely swamped by material desires, at least I know what the highest standard is and can therefore approach it. Shukadeva Goswami points this out in the Bhagavatam in relation to Krishna's pastimes with the gopis. He says, Vikriditam Brajavadu Biridam Chavishno Sharan Vitonai Shunayad Atavar Nayadya Bhaktim Param Bhagavati Pratilabhya Kaman Hidrogam Ashvapahino Chachirena Dira. He said, actually, everyone has to hear about Krishna's pastimes with the Brajavadu, with the damsels of Braj. You have to hear about them. Because by doing so, Bhaktim Param Bhagavati Pratilabhya, one can attain the supreme destination of bhakti by hearing about them. You have to hear Krishna's pastimes with the devotees. And Kaman Hridrogam Ashvapahino Chacharena Dira. Just by hearing that, by getting a taste for those real devotional sentiments, not faking it, then all that lust that's in the heart, all this desire to lord it over by means of karma and jnana, it disappears. Hridrogam Ashvapahino Chacharena Dira. One becomes really sober and fixed in their service. So if we look in our heart, we see that there's so much desire to control, to enjoy, and to utilize the culture of devotional service for that. Like I couldn't make it as the controller and the enjoyer out there. So now I've come and I've mastered all the mannerisms within ISKCON. Now I can be the controller and the enjoyer. That's not the way to conquer Krishna. That's not karma jnana avritam. It's not the way to conquer Krishna. So hearing and chanting about Krishna's pastimes with the devotees is the most powerful remedy, the most powerful tonic. Bhavosa Dutch. It's like medicine for conquering that lust that's in the heart. We have to recognize we're in the diseased condition to really take advantage of it. If we can't recognize that we're in the diseased condition, thinking that I'm doing so well with my ritualistic activities, with my philosophical speculations, how are we going to take that medicine? How are we going to get pure devotional service? So that's the whole point. I think that's the relevant thing that comes from this verse, all of these verses, really. Another thing which is interesting on this subject is when we're talking about hearing and chanting about Krishna's pastimes with his pure devotees, particularly the gopis. It's a very sensitive subject because we don't want to have any sort of materialistic conception of what Krishna is doing, as if it's like some sort of licentious activity, you know. Unfortunately, in India, they really do depict it like that. I mean, Prabhupada's pointing that out. It's because they really do that in India. I saw some book from some artist somewhere. And they're drawing all these pictures of Krishna and the gopis, and it's just like pornography. And we're thinking that, oh, well, that must be what Krishna does if he's enjoying the topmost mellow. I know exactly what the topmost mellow is. It's like this. You take off your clothes and so on and so forth. That's actually not the case. We can get a proper understanding of Krishna's pastimes with the devotees by hearing from the right source. And so sometimes, unfortunately, amongst other societies of Vaishnavas, they make this claim against the devotees in ISKCON that, oh, Srila Prabhupada gave you so much, but he didn't really give you all of that conjugal rasa. He didn't really give you that much, right? Hopefully none of you actually heard that argument, but it comes up sometimes. Say, oh, Prabhupada gave you such nice devotional service, sadhana bhakti. But when it's talking about those Brajavadu, Madhurya Rasa, Prabhupada didn't make that available to you. He kept it really sedated, sterile. People say this in other Vaishnava groups. And actually that's completely bogus. Someone who makes that argument is really just giving evidence to their complete misconception that actually every single day we're hearing and chanting about Krishna's most intimate pastimes with the topmost devotees. Just singing Jai Radha Madhava is a very, very intimate song about Krishna's conjugal love. Jai Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. They're enjoying in the kunjas in the forest by the bank of the Jamuna. It's all there. But it's only because we have this conception that there must be something, you know, physical going on, some humping or pumping or whatever, that we don't see it even in singing Jai Radha Madhava. And singing a Tulsi Kirtan. It's actually a very, very intimate bhajan, right? Please let me to see the Jugala Rupa Rasi. Please let me taste the rasa of this Jugala Rupa of these young boys and girls. Please make me one of your own maidservants so I can render service in this way. It's all there. But how much are we really picking it up? As long as we're thinking that we're this body, as long as we're thinking that success in devotional service is some sort of ritualistic thing or philosophical thing, then even when singing about Radha Madhava, we won't be able to taste it. So what would be the use if you had some sort of like pornographic story? That's why these persons aren't satisfied with the pornographic stories that they make up and they have to go criticize someone else. The fact of the matter is it's all there. Prabhupada gave everything. Not only did he give the actual pastimes of Krishna with his most intimate devotees, but he gave the most effective means of understanding it. Harinam Sankirtan. The very mood of those topmost devotees. To give everyone else the opportunity to serve Krishna in this way. We have to hear about this and experience it, practice it, and then that natural inclination to love the Lord in that certain rasa will be manifest without having to fake it. It's not faking it. So I think we can all take advantage of this opportunity. This is why we're reading Srimad Bhagavatam. To root out all of that lust to control and to enjoy in the heart and to get a conception of real pure devotional service. I wanted to quote one other verse. Vidura actually spoke. He said, Ashesha sankleśa samam virate gunanuvada shravanam murare kimva punastach charanara vindam paragaseva ratir atmalabda. It's very relevant to what we're hearing in this verse. Because we're so concerned with dealing with our own happiness and distress. That's why we're trying to lord it over, right? Well, Vidura says, Ashesha sankleśa. Sankleśa. You have so many miseries. Not just klesha, miseries. Sankleśa. Complete miseries. Like we have kirtan and sankirtan. Big kirtan. So there's klesha, sankirtan. Big miseries. He says, Ashesha sankleśa. You can have unlimited, completely miserable conditions. Shamam vidhate. They all become equalized. Simply by gunanuvada shravanam murari. Simply by hearing and chanting about murari, Krishna. All those things which are troubling in the heart, you just forget about them. When you hear about what murari does. Murari, the enemy of the mura demon. And he says, what to speak of someone who has a taste for serving the flavorful dust of the Lord's lotus feet? Kimba, kim's like who? What to speak of whom? Kimba punas touch charanara vindam paragaseva ratir. Means that at the lotus feet of the Lord, of Sri Murari, there's dust. And that dust has flavor. And you can taste it by service. You don't have to go onto the altar and lick the lotus feet. Sri Sri Rukmini Dwarkadish. You taste that flavor by seva. Seva ratir. Attachment to the seva. There's a dust there and it has a flavor to it. It's like, and you have, what is it, saffron. It has this very, very fine dust and has a very, very fine flavor. And people are willing to pay a lot of money for it just to get some saffron dust. And you put it in your food. But we're so foolish. We're like those persons who think, oh, who needs saffron? We'll just use turmeric, right? That's what we do with our devotional service. I don't need to go for the saffron. I'll just use turmeric. It gives it the same color, whatever. But if we can appreciate that praga seva ratya, there's this flavorful dust at the Lord's lotus feet, then atmalabdha, one becomes completely satisfied. So I'd like to finish at this point. Hare Krishna. Hopefully there's some comments or something that some of our senior devotees can add, or any corrections, or if there's any questions from anybody. Please feel free. Yes, Prabhu. Shelter of his devotees. Hearing and chanting about the devotees, serving the devotees, learning how to serve from a devotee. Like we were just saying to Srila Prabhupada, your lotus feet are our only shelter. Exact same principle is here. And that's something that you don't need to like make esoteric or vague. I'm taking shelter in this way that I see fit. Taking shelter of a devotee is very specific. The devotee will tell you very specifically, chant like this, do this service, read this book, go back to Godhead. So it's beyond speculation. But that takes a lot of humility, doesn't it? To learn how to love from someone else. In this material world, we think that we're so expert with our propensity to love. We think that we're so expert at enjoying. It takes a lot of humility to go up to someone and ask them, how do I serve Krishna? How do I please Krishna? It takes a lot of humility to accept that Krishna is more pleased with that than if we try it ourselves. So in this way, we can take shelter of Krishna, shelter of the Lord's lotus feet. But certainly, Archidha Prabhu or Vijaya Prabhu has more to say on that. Okay, thank you very much. Grantara Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Gaura Premanandi.